So this will be our last Techie Talk of 2020 with State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy. Techie, nice to see you.
Good to see you, Joe. Coming to the end of 2020 already. Time flies when we're in pandemic.
It seems like it was so quick and yet so long this year, that's for sure.
Hey, it's every day feels like a month. The year's coming to a close. A lot of things happened in 2020, from COVID to forest fires to the most amazing, interesting presidential election that is hopefully finally over, but swearing in day for them is until January 20th. And I'm starting my sixth term, is it? I'm losing count in my mind, obviously. Starting my sixth term on January 6th.
Yeah, have you heard anything more about swearing-in ceremonies at the State House?
No, it's still been fairly quiet. I know for an email from yesterday, these Information Services or House IT has put together a plan for us to migrate our materials to a more secure cloud. So we're supposed to be getting new equipment for the staff, hopefully in January. I've been hearing from my staff that their personal devices are not holding up much longer given the sheer ruggedness of the usage. Everyone's computer's on is almost like 12 hours a day, it feels like, including myself. But, as a representative, use of personal devices is not unexpected. So we aren't issued a state cell phone. We're not issued personal computers. I'm not issued a car. I'm not issued actually anything as an elected official. So the expectation for us to use personal devices is expected. It's kind of a weird thing for elected officials. But staff are not expected to have to use personal devices nonstop. And I think a lot of people on this will understand what I'm saying who are working from home. Actually, I have a bill I'm going to file next year to change the tax deductions to allow people who are working from home to deduct their personal devices the best they can on some calculation as part of a tax deduction next year. So that's what I'm looking to try to see what we can do with one of the ways to address the pandemic issue.
I think that's great because I think we talked about this before that even after the pandemic comes to an end, I think a lot of companies are going to allow remote working for sure.
Yeah, my friends had actually done remote working. I mean, have a company issued devices, and some provide pay adjustments reflecting the using personal resources at home. So their pay is reflective of that. And some places provide, stipend / per diem / reimbursements of some form to do that. Obviously, the pandemic has caught all of us off guard, and people who would never work remotely, or business never work remotely, including us, has never prepared for this type of new model. So going into 2021, we're going to still be like this at some level with the State House. So, I've been urging the Speaker's office to kind of like, hey, the staff here is kind of gone like 9 months here and they've been using their own electricity and we don't pay them that well. So we really need to rethink the situation more like the private sector and actually other parts of government. Certain managerial positions in state government does receive laptops and cell phones from the state. Obviously, there are secure devices that return after their employment. They don't follow you around. But, it's kind of something we need to think about. I think, employers and employees really have got to start talking among themselves about, what is really fair on your using your personal resources for business purposes. And some of us can't take a business deduction because you don't have sufficient deduction on your taxes to count all of it. It isn't worth it because you have to exceed the personal deduction already allowed.
Right.
A lot of young folks don't have big enough personal deductions to justify the business deduction. So a conversation has been having the Speaker's office about some fairness here for my staff. So. After 2021 into 2022 and 23 and 24, I mean, there'd be some businesses that are going to permanently be remote. I mean, especially in high tech, certain financial sectors are going to reduce the size of their office space or maybe go to rotating office space. So there is definitely going to be an impact on commercial real estate prices in dense urban cities.
Yeah.
That's going to be a sticker shock coming in. Talking to some of my friends who are looking at commercial real estate, particularly in Boston, for some reason that segment of the economy has not come to that realization yet, given the fact they keep inflating the prices despite nobody using their space.
Well, I mean, supply and demand ultimately is going to dictate, what those rents and leases go for. And a lot of property owners might find themselves stuck with some pretty big pieces of vacant property.
Yeah, I agree with that, particularly if you're a target group can work remotely currently and has no difficulty in their operations. I do believe that we have to be in person at some level, but I think there's also a rethinking about exactly how much equipment you need. What really, quote unquote, impresses a client coming into town, which nobody's coming into town right now. I talked to some of my other, colleagues that have, not colleagues, but I mean friends around the Hill who have offices around the Hill, and many of them whose leases were expiring this year, just let it expire. They move their stuff out to storage and because they can't see a reason why they need to have an office space that's going to cost them $20,000 a month, $40,000 a month, when everyone has been working remotely and the numbers in Boston are climbing.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the Speaker's office, Jackie, can we talk a little bit about a change in leadership in the House of Representatives?
Yeah, it's nice when I say the word Speaker's office. I didn't say which Speaker.
Well, we know Speaker DeLeo has announced that he is stepping down, and we may know who will be stepping up.
Yeah, if you've been reading the papers, today's Friday. What is today? It's 15th?
Today's the 18th, actually.
Is it 18th?
It's just a week from Christmas, Jackie. 1 week from today.
Lord have mercy. Once again, pandemic dates. If you're reading, people who watch The Hill closely and read the papers have been getting inklings here and there over the course of the past 3 years about Speaker DeLeo's future. It's kind of one of those funny things, right? Reading about it for 3 years in one form or another about how long the speaker's going to be here, is a longer serving speaker, and obviously he's also getting up there in age. So they got those combination of factors. As a person who works in the place and actually has to obviously listen to a lot of the speculation and rumors, you don't get into it until you actually see someone say they're going to do something. Otherwise, it's just speculation and rumors. So the speaker decided to definitely end speculation and rumors this week. And it has been indicated by Ron and the Quincy Sun, as well as, inklings here and there that he would be interested in being speaker after Bob DeLeo. And for people who don't know, Bob and Ron have been friends for well into 30 years. So unlike other political House of Cards, West Wing, Madam Secretary type situation, Ron would never, ever, ever try to usurp Bob as speaker. So there was never that scenario ever going to happen. And, Ron does what you should do. In the state house, you treat people with respect, you treat people with kindness and compassion, and you work with other people the best you can despite disagreements on public policy. And Ron does have that capacity and has been doing it his entire career, but more so as a leader. When you're a leadership person, people come to you for leadership and also to get advice and try to help out. And for people who've never been elected before, this is a very jarring experience of how it's so different that you thought it would be. I think it's by experience of every elected official that's come through this place. And a person as a chairman, I'm not a leader, is a high responsibility to your members of your committee, in my case, to demonstrate some level of leadership and provide guidance and help to my members as a chair. So Ron's been doing that for his entire career and at a higher level for over a decade now.
So, for folks who might not know, we should just clarify, Ron is State Representative Ron Mariano of Quincy, the current majority leader.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm being far too casual.
Just wanted to put that out there for folks who might not know who we're talking about.
I've known Ron a long time too. So you know Ron, I've known Ron. So, and it's Quincy. I mean, we're all friends. I think that's one of the lovely things about Quincy politics. People here do treat you like your neighbor, and it's one of the best things about Quincy politics.
Yeah. What would a speakership by Ron Mariano mean for the city of Quincy, do you think?
Well, we're discussing, he's going to be the first speaker south of Boston since Horace Cahill in 1937. So, and he was, or Horace Cahill was from Braintree. So this is very significant for Quincy and anybody south of Quincy, or immediately in the South Shore, but to have the highest leader in the House and one of the big three, so to speak, in Massachusetts politics. I do not know. I have to look deep into the annals of history, even before the founding of the state, to see if there's been another leader from Quincy, where I don't want to admit to it, before we were Quincy, called Braintree, back in the colonial era, to find out if there's anybody that led what was the legislature prior to the founding of Massachusetts as a formal state.
Yeah.
After the American Revolution. So I really should do a little homework to see if we can find that information somewhere on the internet just to satisfy some level of curiosity. But, I mean, this is a big deal for Quincy. I mean, you now have one of the three most powerful people in the state shaping state policy. A Speaker of the House represents not just Quincy. He represents the House. And I think it's going to be an adjustment for Quincy folks to understand. That Ron now represents the entire branch of government for the state of Massachusetts. That's actually part of the job. A Speaker of the House means you speak for the House.
Right.
And as the Speaker DeLeo always reminded us, his responsibility not just the Democratic caucus when he's in the form of a speaker, it's also to represent the entire body and represent the body effectively and in unison. So he was going to have to make trips to places like Springfield and Bloomington and New Bedford and Fort River and Provincetown and Salem and Boxborough and Marlborough.
Yeah, the islands, you know, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, sure, yeah.
Ron's going to have to go around the state representing the House once we get out of pandemic. So maybe Ron's going to be in good shape for a short period during pandemic. But once we're through this, he's going to have to get on the road.
And, well, he'll still maintain his representative district as well, right?
Oh, I hope so. Otherwise, it just be awkward.
Right.
You know, you obviously have to stay as a state representative. He's still representing third Norfolk district in his case. But he'll have expanded staff. So as part of the speakership, you actually have expanded staff that does help more constituent services, you know, more liaisons to the other government entities. Obviously, his own policy people in the office, as well as people to do some of the day-to-day operations. And Ron's going to have to get used to the idea of having a driver. Ron does not really have a driver. So, and people ask, well, why do you need that? Well, I mean, you know, if you start driving around the state for a full day, I mean, those of you who work driving a lot, you know, this can get exhausting. And
right.
I love Ron, but Ron ain't that young. Okay, let's put it out there. He's going to hear this and probably beat me up later by saying that, but it is what it is, folks. So, you know.
Who would be in line to be the next majority leader? How does that work?
Once a speaker's elected, well, this is kind of a quirky situation. It was going to the end of the year, but we'll go back to process in a minute. Ron will make recommendations to the Democratic caucus for a leadership team and committee assignments. So what happens every session is that at some point after the speaker's election, everybody is stripped of their chairmanships automatically because the session has ended. It is not a punishment or anything else. It's just the fact the rules only have your committee assignments and your leadership positions until the session ends. So when January 6th comes, I will no longer be a chairman and I will have no committee assignments. For the sake of functionality, we're all kind of just maintaining the committee offices, continue to be the bosses of the office just to maintain continuity. But technically, I'm not supposed to hear any bills. I can't refer bills out. I can't release a bill or anything of that matter. So when the speaker puts together a recommendation list of folks to assignments for committees and his leadership team, that list is presented to the Democratic caucus. And the Democratic caucus will vote on the list. If a member doesn't like what's on the list, he can try to lobby the caucus to change his position. This doesn't happen very often at our level of government. A lot of the lobbying occurs before the caucus begins.
Okay.
You don't go to the caucus floor and just lobby then there. Much like a political
convention almost, really.
Yeah, let's say Catherine Clark. I mean, you know, we're talking about a massive rise in government. Catherine's going to make whip, one of the whips in the House of Representatives. Catherine Clark has not been here that long. You know, I've served in office longer than Catherine Clark. But, you know, through basically working with the House leadership under Nancy Pelosi and when she was the minority leader in the House, when Cameron has demonstrated enormous value to the House of Representatives in D.C., and is able to secure sufficient support from her fellow members and the speaker to very likely elect her as a whip next year. That is extremely significant. And, briefly in the federal delegation, I mean, you have Richie Neal out in Springfield as a House Ways and Means Chair. You have McGovern in Worcester as the Roos Chair. People who are older remember the days of Tip O'Neill and Joe Moakley, when Tip was the speaker and Joe Moakley was the Roos chair. Not exactly the same because, you know, obviously one is not the speaker, but, you know, what most powerful people in the House of Representatives, you know, are in Massachusetts.
Right.
And you throw in Catherine Clark as the whip. That has enormous influence. Hmm. And Stephen Lynch has enormous seniority now. So does Bill Keating, given the high rotation going on down there. You know, they could be in line for either a chairmanship or a high-level subcommittee chair. That helps the whole delegation. And if, you know, the Republicans in this could be like, oh, no, don't talk about Georgia. But if somehow Georgia flips Democrat, which I was completely wrong about Georgia in the presidential election on my predictions, but if somehow flips Democrat, you know, you're going to see both Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey reach leadership positions in the Senate.
Okay, so stay tuned for that. Here in Massachusetts, what are the chances you or another member of the Quincy delegation would be the majority leader?
I wouldn't bank on that. You really don't want to have two people from the same community.
Okay.
At the very top two spots of that. But we've done very well over the years. I mean, obviously, I'm made chairman. Bruce is the vice chair of tourism. Mark Cusack in Braintree is the chair of revenue. Jamie Murphy's the chair of financial services in Weymouth. Bill Driscoll next door is a vice chair. So, you know, the South Shore delegation's done well overall. I mean, Joe Machino is still relatively new, but she's very well liked down in Hingham. You know, inside our little geographic zone, I mean, we have already people in a lot of leadership positions. The expectation, I would think, is that even if we maintain our current chairs with Ron as the speaker, that will only amplify our ability to get things done as a delegation, not just a Quincy delegation, but also a delegation south of Boston. And I think that's very important to remember as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I might not have a leader in my name and maybe a different chair or maybe the current chair of what I have now, but I can't tell you what it's going to be yet. It's that's another conversation that the various members will have to have with what I hope to say Speaker Mariano coming up soon. So okay. We will have most likely telephone calls with Ron, every member will, regarding the request for committee assignments.
Sure, yeah, all right. Something to look forward to in the new year. Can we talk a little bit about the pandemic, Tacky? Things are really unhealthy right now when it comes to the numbers, both here, Quincy, across the state, across the country.
Yeah, I think you watch any national news and I think we're exhausted by watching the sad stories we're hearing everywhere that, you know, the country's well into 30,000 deaths, you know, we're well past 60 million infections. I do remind folks, just because you see the infection numbers on television doesn't mean that's the actual infection number, because people are infected, they've never been tested. And the people have probably died in hospitals around the country that were never tested for COVID-19. And so these numbers are probably below what they really are. Mm. So I think people take some false sense of security if you're in a low number area, believing that that's all there is, until you can test every single individual, you know, every 2 or 3 days, which is never going to happen, folks. I don't think we're going to be standing in line every 2 or 3 days to get tested.
Right.
you can't get a truly accurate number. So, you know, I always remind folks of that. Hospitalizations are not good. I mean, I'm looking at the graph in front of me. You know, we peaked at over 4,000 hospitalizations in May. You know, we're closing in on 2,500 some hospitalizations in December. And it's just this unhappy looking graph with this dip and rise as we had the slower September. And last week I talked about ICUs and regions, and I did a poor job because I had all the numbers wrong regarding how many ICU beds we have.
Okay.
So, you know, our ICU beds in the state is 1,472. As of yesterday afternoon, 72% of them have been used statewide. So 1,470, of course, intensive care units, most severe to severe. Boston has 511 in the Boston area, of 81% has been consumed, 257 in Central Mass, with 62% are used. Metro West has 231 ICU beds with 74% used. Northeast section of the state has 112 beds, of which 83% are used. Southeastern Mass has 206 beds with 67% used, and Western Mass, which is the Berkshires, has 155 beds, of which only 58% are used so far. So we're running out of ICU beds very rapidly already, correcting COVID-19. For non-ICU beds in the state, we have 9,321 ICU non-ICU beds in hospitals. These are just the hospitals. 85% of the state's hospital capacity has been filled.
Okay.
In the greater Boston area, you have 2,930 hospital beds. 88% have been filled.
Wow. Okay.
In Central Mass, 1,094 beds. 79% have been filled. Metro West Boston, 1,530, has 87 beds filled. Northeastern Mass, 1,052 beds, 86% filled. Southeastern Mass, 1,544 beds with 83% filled, and Western Massachusetts, 1,171 beds with 82% filled. So once we, if the number doesn't go down in terms of infection rates, I mean, it's very possible we're going to see more field hospitals opening up. We talked about last week regarding Lowell and Worcester. You know, we obviously, Boston got the Boston Convention Center. And the state, we have to look at new venues in Southeastern Mass regarding this. And, you know, we're talking now right after a major snowstorm. If we have a medical emergency, whether it be COVID, non-COVID, obviously snowstorms are a big, real problem. But if you have COVID numbers continue to rise and it overwhelms our hospital system, and you have another type of medical emergency, prioritizations can be very challenging. And if you have another type of medical emergency, then you got to go to a very dangerous situation with COVID in the area. And hospitals do have segregated emergency rooms. There's a COVID entry point and there's a non-COVID entry point now. So it's very important for people to know that it is safe to go to a hospital. But as the hospitals are clearly becoming overrun at this stage, you know, it reemphasizes the need for all of us to reduce the infection rate, because just because you may not be feeling symptoms doesn't mean you can't give it to someone else that will get symptoms and potentially find themselves in an ICU or in a hospital bed.
Yeah, it's why the governor just is always emphatic about asking people to not travel over the holidays. It's pretty clear that the surge we're in now is, connected to the Thanksgiving holiday.
I have no intention of going anywhere. We talk about the fact we did Thanksgiving outside of the family. And it was not Thanksgiving Day. Obviously, with the snowstorm here, we're not doing outdoor dining with family in the yard. And we are, planning a quiet holiday, and we'll do some Zoom calls with folks and, talking to some friends. I mean, some people with family members who are alone, whether it be parents or siblings or children, that are out living by themselves. This can be a lonely time of year. And, I think people need to, I don't know what to say. I mean, it can be tough being by yourself. It's important for folks to just make a phone call and make extra time in the day to call someone.
Yep, just checking in can be a world of good for sure for somebody.
Absolutely. I think, we call people a lot this time of year, but I think I think it's even more important for people just to drop a line, make a chunk of time a day for yourself, and talk. As you can tell by my constant happiness of hearing you every week, that the desire of new conversation is desirable.
Oh, well, we're happy to oblige for sure. And there is some positive news to talk about, right? There's a vaccine, and maybe as of today, there'll be two vaccines.
Yep, there are two vaccines. Moderna makes three. Johnson & Johnson's up next. I know globally, Chinese companies have vaccines already rolling out as well, pursuant to their FDA version of FDA. And I don't know what's going on with the Russian vaccine. I don't understand that one. But the United States and the EU are both, and the UK, because, the UK left the EU, which is a whole other fun conversation about Brexit, have all been working to approve vaccines, as well as our neighbors to north and neighbors to the south, Canada and Mexico, to approve the vaccines that we've all heard in news, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson's coming up next. So Big Pharma, let's call it what it is coming through at a breakneck pace.
Yes.
To get us a vaccine. Massachusetts got about 59,000-ish doses already. As you saw in the news, they're in these freezer containers, and they got to get into the freezers fast and so forth. They have about 3 minutes to mix the vial into a solution and put it into your arm. So you've seen healthcare workers get their vaccine first. Obvious reasons, they're the ones that directly exposed to COVID-19. I mean, this isn't, this is common sense. So the CDC has put out guidelines of who gets vaccine first. However, it is up to the states to make the final decision. So the CDC is only making a recommendation under the current presidential administration. We'll see what the new one does come January 20th. But we got some statistics from the COVID-19 Command Center to put some perspective for everybody about the distribution and size of populations we're dealing with. So, for example, congregate care residents, people in assisted living facilities, nursing homes are in the first phase priority, as well as healthcare workers in direct contact with COVID-19. And patients that adults, seniors with severe existing conditions are on the priority list. So for congregate care people, it's 102,000 people. And we're going to get about 100,000 vaccines. So, but once again, healthcare workers are prioritized. People that work directly with COVID patients, is the rough estimate is 205,000 people. Hmm. So, that's how many people in Massachusetts that have direct, regular contact, all in a healthcare setting, with COVID-19 patients. That's the person that drives the ambulance. That's the person that, does your first triage take in. That's the administrator in the COVID section with the doctors and nurses, the lab techs that has to handle these materials, the janitorial staff that has to remove those materials. It is hazardous waste. Mm-hmm. That's 205,000. So let's put this in perspective, right? So we might get 100,000 doses by the end of December. That's the hope. And it won't even cover half our healthcare workers.
No, and you require two doses, right?
That's correct. So when you hear 100,000, it's under 50,000 people getting a dose.
That's right, yeah.
And it has to be done within 21 days or it may not be effective at all. So timing is everything. And, just imagine trying to do 50,000 person injections. That's a lot of people. So you're throwing congregate care people that's 102,000, so that, 307,000 some odd people. And then you have people that work home care attendants. There's 112,000 home care attendants, people that, do health care for people at home.
Yep.
Adults who have two existing conditions, such as heart conditions, OCPD, kidney disease, et cetera, 634,000 people. Adults who are age 65 and over, and adults who have at least one condition that's considered chronic, such as cancer and obesity and heart conditions and so forth, is 1.123 million people. People who are working healthcare but not directly facing COVID every day in a hospital healthcare setting is 103,000. So these are the other people that work in hospitals are segregated from the COVID wards. They're still at risk. mm-hmm. but they're out there. Then you move into people they believe that work in grocery stores, childcare, education, mass transit, other retail essential service workers that you see throughout this pandemic that I thank every time I see them for their work. When I go to the store, make sure to thank people. Besides being polite, they're the ones that are keeping me fed and you fed. There's about 393,000 of those folks statewide is the rough estimate. That's our essential workers that I've been looking at throughout this pandemic. Other places that are not, that are healthcare workers and others that are not forward-facing COVID folks are about 44,000. So people like, for example, speech pathologists, technicians, people they do the hospital equipment, they're mm-hmm. not direct contact with COVID patients. And young adults and children between the ages of 14 and 30. So between 14 and 30, it's about 112,600 people. And that's actually some of my staff fit in that category. And then anybody else that doesn't fit in the first nine categories is 3,092,000 people, which is me and you.
And me and most people that we know, right, yeah.
So we have about 6.9-ish million population. I expect that number to be bigger if everyone fill out their census forms. I'll plug the census one more time. So I'll be about, roughly, slightly less than half the state is in the last phase of COVID recipient. And even in the last phase, how do you prioritize over 3 million people?
Right.
I do have, as I've talked before, everybody knows I have food allergies to quite a crazy extent. But I don't honestly fit into a pre-existing condition. And there are some concerns about this vaccine with people who may have a different type of allergies, which is still studying. So I'm not sure where I fit in yet.
Right. Do people just sign up, Tacky, to put their name on a list or something? Or, how will that work?
We don't know yet. Right now, the priority is, direct facing COVID workers and people at a higher risk, which they obviously, healthcare workers and people in congregate care, they can find. Next category down, this still have to work it out as we go because it's going to be based on how many doses we can get, right? So it's almost like a cart and horse situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, depending on how much we get, we determine who's a priority, but we set a priority list without knowing how much we're going to get.
Right, okay.
This may shift around depending on availability. And I know they're making a lot of vaccine every day, but there's a lot of people here. I mean, this is that gravity. There's a lot of people. I just can't really describe this any other way.
It's an unprecedented, logistical procedure that is going to require kind of building the plane as you're flying it, really. There's no blueprint to go by.
No, this is the whole thing about this whole pandemic. We're all kind of trying to figure it out as we go along. So expect this change, plan to make change, depending on how we shift priorities. And, we haven't even talked about kids under the age of 14, which there's been very little clinical studies done. So even while we're rolling vaccine, the clinical studies are still continuing.
Mm-hmm.
That has not ended. So as more data becomes available, we'll know more about potential side effects and we'll know about the impact on different age groups and the impact on different people with different immune systems, different socioeconomics.
I mean, the virus itself is barely a year old, so we don't have a lot of statistical data to go by.
Yeah, and we can thank modern technology these days.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in the most technologically advanced era globally, not just this country, but, Europe and China and Russia and the British, Canadians. I mean, we're much well-educated, highly technological society than ever. And, I'm going to give a quick plug out back to my colleagues on biotech. I mean, Massachusetts is the leader of biotech, started well into a decade ago as a state government initiative to make this the biotech hub. Not like we were planning for pandemic, but clearly our investment over the decade, and we made a new investment last year for another decade of state infrastructure support for the industry, is real, folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, beyond just trying to cure cancer, which is still very challenging, as well as looking at rare diseases, beyond just having jobs and state revenue from this industry, we're going to try to save the lives of the entire country and hundreds and billions of people up beyond ourselves here.
Right.
So Massachusetts is a leader, and we are, this area is leading the science on this.
Will there be a cost to get a vaccine, Jackie? How is that going to be handled?
The federal government is paying for the vaccine.
Okay.
So you saw in the news about options to buy and whatnot, and under the current presidential administration and incoming presidential administration, there'll be, they will be working on continuation of purchasing more vaccine. Unlike China and Russia, we are privately owned companies. Those countries are state-owned pharmaceutical companies. So I have my concerns about the regulator and the manufacturer being the same person, but that's a philosophical issue about, you know, capitalism.
Right, right.
I do have the idea that this, the private sector is putting it together and the government sector is in charge of confirming its safety.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other issue. I do want to warn people with scams, though. I've been talking about scams throughout the pandemic.
Yep.
The FTC has confirmed a new scam where people get calls, emails, text messages, door knocks, flyer drops, so forth and so forth around the country, telling them that you can pay someone money to move you up the list of the vaccine. That you have to pay them money to get the vaccine. They have to pay money or give them personal information to qualify for a vaccine. There is no cost to you. Like any other scam, if they're looking for money or personal information, it's a scam. So people should be aware that as the vaccine rollout continues, you will not be charged.
Okay.
You, you know, and consult your primary physician or doctor's group that you normally interact with.
Yep, that's a great piece of advice. That's your first point of contact for sure.
Yeah, you're not sure, contact your primary care.
Yeah.
Or your doctor's group that you work with. Obviously, you can contact my office at 722-2014, 617-722-2014. And we've been, we talked about this with some other issues, like chasing down scams for people to confirm or not confirm that this is a scam. So we've been doing that on behalf of folks to find out. But on my website and my Twitter, and has already put up information from the FTC, some nice little easy graphics about what to look for scams regarding COVID-19 vaccine. So I know some people on listening to this is very eager about getting vaccinated, but definitely contact your primary care to have a conversation about when those vaccines become available. When we hit that point, we'll have sufficient, any number of vaccine going into the millions in the Massachusetts, not tens of thousands.
Right.
You should talk to your primary care about what is the plan for injection.
Yep. In the short term, though, I mean, all of the, you know, mask wearing, social distancing is going to continue probably, I don't know, until middle of 2021.
I would think we're going to have to do this at least into 2022 regarding mask wearing and sanitation. And to be honest with you, we should continue the sanitation anyway. Good hygiene is important, everybody. This continues to be the thing that baffles me about COVID-19 to start with, is the fact that we had to teach people how to wash your hands. I still cannot get over that, okay, guys? Something you taught on Saturday morning cartoons as a child in the 80s, and your parents told you can't come to dinner, and they're on your case when you come out of the bathroom when you're a child. You know, I just don't know what to say anymore about that. I know mask wearing is a bit more of a learning curve in terms of comfort level. I get that. But wash your hands. I wash my hands. I shake hands all the time before the pandemic. I was washing my hands and hand wiping on a regular basis. I mean, the nature of a lot of physical contact. I just cannot mentally get over this thing of us having to tell people to wash their hands. Even after we get through this with the vaccine in place, we don't know if the vaccine prevents you from being a carrier. There's still a chance you used to be a carrier despite being vaccinated, hence the need for herd immunity, which is needing to get a high percentage of people, very, very high percentage of people vaccinated on a national global level. But at the same time, a continuation of good hygiene, even post-vaccination, is essential. And like I said, why we mask wear if you're vaccinated, just in case you have the vaccine, have the virus in you. You can still respiratory it out. And, you know, once again, it can be on your hands.
Or wash them. Yes.
Wash your hands. You know, yeah, it's, you could leave viruses that you've been in contact with, make that, you know, are on your body somehow until we get to herd immunity.
Yeah.
So the risk is not over with vaccine. And that's kind of, I think the media has not done a great job kind of trying to articulate that.
Well, yeah, it's not as sexy as saying, you know, we've cured a pandemic.
Yeah, and the learning curve is higher. And, you know, our attention spans as a culture has gotten shorter. You really need to spend, you know, 5 to 15 minutes to really learn about what you need to do associated with this vaccine and how much we do and don't know at the moment.
Right.
I think that's part of this conversation as well. So just because if you're a person in the next few months that have the vaccine does not mean you can stop washing your hands. Does not mean you cannot stop wearing a mask. There are still so many unknowns. And I think people really need to listen to the science you know, use reputable news sources. That's a whole other conversation for another day too about reputable news sources. And, but there's, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, science journal of medicine out there and others that are putting out information slowly but steadily in that digestible formats for you. And the CDC, expecting the Biden administration, the CDC will hopefully get under a single message, which has been one of the problems in the U.S. I mean, I was asked about this before, you know, what's one of the problems? We can't get a unified message. So hopefully under a new administration, we have a more unified message with the governors. I think, you know, put out to the population what's happening here.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if I hear one more time on a news story, I didn't believe it was real right before they died. I mean.
Right. I know. We're going to have to wrap it up there, Tacky, but you gave out your number and your website, but I want to do that one more time if folks want to reach out to you.
Sure. You can try the office, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Hit any name on the list. And they'll get the voicemail. Right now, voicemails are being emailed to the office. So our individual emails are getting voicemails emailed to us, as well as the website at tackychin.org, tackychin.org. We put a lot of information on human services and other stuff up there that you can get the numbers before even calling us. And, of course, our Facebook page at Tacky Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan. I do have a Twitter account, but I don't really use it, at Tacky Chan. Which is not nearly as useful because we're trying to keep up with the other forms of social media. But, you know, there's a lot, we can do graphics and stuff to try to digest information on Facebook. And of course, you can try to email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. This time of year, my email is a little slower. So your odds are improving that I will catch your email more timely at the moment. I can't promise you once the bill filing season, I get the thousands of emails over the course of several weeks asking me to co-sign bills. That's going to be fun come January 6th because it's like these groups know when to bulk email you. Yep. Right after January 6th starts, it's like massive amount of email comes in.
That's their job, right, is to know that. Sure, yeah.
It is their job. Massive bulk emails start coming in on January 6th.
Yeah. I wanted to wish you, your family, your staff a very happy, healthy holiday season, Tacky.
You too. You know, I wish you well for Merry Christmas and going into the new year for everybody. I wish everybody a safe holiday season with your loved ones the best you can in these circumstances. And most importantly, let's hope 2021 is nothing like 2020.
I don't think we'll get a lot of argument there for sure.
Except for Ron becoming speaker. That we're good with. Okay, Ron becoming speaker in 2020 would be good. But everything else, let's just move on, people.
Just call it a wash.
Call it a wash and we'll have a fun 2021 or at least a more optimistic one.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks again, Tacky. Really appreciate it. We'll check in the new year.
We'll see you in the new year, Joe.